You're listening to the Bearded Theologians podcast, hosted by Zach Bechtold and Matt Franks. If you'd like to learn more about the Bearded Theologians, you can go online at beardedtheologians.com, where we have past podcasts, blogs, and a couple of items for sale. So check us out, beardedtheologians.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy this week's show.
You're listening to the Bearded Theologians podcast, hosted by Matt Franks
and Zach Bechtold. And we have a very special guest with us today, a friend of the podcast and a friend of Matt and I's, the Most High Reverend Michael Smith, who's the lead pastor of Trinity UMC in Mullica Hill, New Jersey. Man, Michael, thanks for being on with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Let me just start off by saying that I'm definitely a fan and a friend of the podcast, but I'm not a friend to the two named gentlemen called Matthew Franks. He is my nemesis. He is the person in my life that I want to destroy. So this will be a fun interview because I've never met Matthew before, but boy, do I want to sock him right in the nose. And
I came to Colorado and you weren't here. So like
I left.
Yeah,
I heard you were coming and I said, yeah. I need to move to the eastern part of our country. Not everyone can have the love of Zach Bechtold like Matthew does. And I am going to do everything in my power to take him down and to get that love. You know, my name isn't Michael. You think my parents would have named someone Michael Smith? I changed my name to Michael because that's Zach's wife's name. That's how much I am committed to getting Zach's love. So,
I like this.
So let's get it going. But Matthew, you need to know I'm coming for you.
I'm ready.
This is my favorite intro to a podcast ever.
And let me say that, you know, based upon the first minute and a half of this podcast, I think it's going really well. I think I should become your Eastern correspondent, the official Eastern correspondent of the. So in case you want to know what's going on in the future, I'm coming to you live from the future because that's how time works.
That's right. From
2 hours ahead of you.
Yeah.
The world's changing fast, fellas. You know, you want to stay up to date, you need an Eastern correspondent.
We've been looking for somebody out in the East Coast that we could trust, that you know, one of us could have a special bond with and the other could be the nemesis. So we're doing well. I love
That's the correct word for it. Nemesis. Yes, absolutely.
Love it. Michael, thanks for being on, man. And thanks for having fun. That's what we enjoy doing. And truly kind of what we're going to talk about today in how we're approaching ministry and kind of life and the work that we do as clergy, and what, you know, what fun and joy and innovation are coming up. You're in the future, man. So tell us what's coming on. What are the innovative things happening 2 hours from now?
So, yeah, I'll just say, you know, I've been a, United Methodist pastor, ordained an elder. This is like my 16th year of appointed ministry. So most of it's been as a pastor in a local church. I had the privilege of being out in the Mountain Sky Conference as a superintendent of Vitality, Congregational and Community Vitality. And that's where I got to meet some wonderful people out there. My heart is certainly for the local church to see it fulfill its mission, for its effectiveness to be making an impact in people's lives. I think probably, you know, if people are listening to this and they're kind of within the church world, to, you know, just keep reminding them of why did you get into this stuff in the first place? Not necessarily just through the language of call, but it was, it probably had something to do with like making a difference in someone's life or helping someone or feeling that whatever God has gifted you in would fit well within this type of situation or context, like in a local church with people. It's hard. You're going to go through difficult things. But whenever it starts to get frustrating, like spreadsheets and raising budgets, like no one got into this thing to say, I really want to just do stewardship campaigns every fall to make sure that we meet our budget. It's part of the job, but that's probably why no one signed up for it. But, you know, all of this stuff gets connected. So I love the local church. I want to see the local church thrive. And I think certainly I just had, I had a meeting where you ever notice there's like certain trends in meetings where I remember, and I've been doing this very long, but like the first couple of years of ministry for me were the conversations that we were having were really about innovation. It was like really about the future church, and I remember I was part of a cohort called like 21st century leaders, and it was already the 21st century or it was something just really goofy or weird. But I'm like, this is kind of a weird name to call the cohort, but it was just about the future. So we spent a lot of time talking about future innovative stuff. And it seems like every year, every time we have like an all clergy meeting, the biggest topic that our leaders have been trying to help us navigate is how to have difficult conversations. And like, how do you handle this crisis? How do you handle this situation? Like for the past 4 or 5 years, it's just been like, we've been so in the mud and trying to figure out conflict and how to not talk about this. We've got like wars going on in the world. And the second you say something that isn't going to be necessarily as, down the line, the middle of the road, you're going to upset somebody. And so for me, like to remind myself of, the future is actually going to be probably close to what we already know it being in the fundamental parts of what we do. So as much as we talk innovation, you have to think about innovation isn't just going to be about doing something new. It's going to be getting to the core of what we do. And when we understand the core of what we do and who we are and why we do it, it isn't going to necessarily be about a new initiative or a new thing. The hardest work of innovation is knowing yourself. And the hardest work of innovation is staring at that marble like Michelangelo did. Matthew, not the Ninja Turtle. There was, get some culture, my man. And when he stared and he saw David, you know what I mean? That famous quote of creating something out of just this. It's that you got to know it. You got to know yourself. So, really what I want to kind of talk about are just some fundamental things. Cause I love what Rick Rubin said. You'd think you'd be a fan of his just based upon his beard. So Rick Rubin, great music producer, wrote a book, I think called the Art of Being Creative, I think. So double check that, but it's a great book of creativity. And, but he talks about, not just being a producer, because obviously he's produced all these great musical groups and any type of phenomenal gold platinum record that you in the past 30 years he's had his hand in it. But he talks about going from a producer to a reducer. So innovation isn't going to be just necessarily about creating something new. It's going to be reducing it down into its core elements. Because, and this is a Rubin quote, the audience doesn't know what it wants. It only knows what's come before. So doing the work of innovation is going to be really challenging when the group of which you are trying to innovate for isn't going to necessarily see it. So I know I just said a lot and none of it made sense. So what are your responses to what I just said?
No, I like it. So we're doing the Mountain Sky Conference, we're talking a lot about innovation through fresh expressions and work like that. And what I have noticed is we're trying to create fresh expressions with vision rather than with intent. And this is still just an idea I'm trying to unpack with some folks, but when you talk about innovation, yeah, it's the core of who we are, right? And what we do. But often in the church, we think about, we're going to innovate to this end goal, which is often let's put butts in pews, right? Let's bring it all back to Sunday. And yet I don't know that I'm going to make a definitive statement. That is not where the innovation of the church is. Sunday morning's great. Worship is great. But that's where, if we're going to innovate, it doesn't point back to Sunday morning. Maybe in some cases it does, but we're going to reach groups that don't know what they want yet. What they don't want is Sunday morning, or they would already be there, right? And so if we can get to the core of who and who we are and what we're doing, the innovation happens in smaller groups outside of the church, right? We get back to the foundations of the Wesley model of class systems and or class meetings and things like that that happen in the smaller arena that don't necessarily point back to the bigger one, but create space in all of these different places for people. We're using the fresh expression language here. But I don't know that we're doing it with the core of who we are and what we do. I think we're doing it as a reactionary thing of, oh my God, we got to do something. Let's be innovative. And fresh expressions are 20 years old, 30 years old, right? Like they're not innovative. They've been around for a little bit. And yet we're talking about them like it's this brand new thing, but we've been doing it for a long time. And we just have this vision that it's going to save the church rather than the intent that we're going to meet people where they are.
Well, they were doing it on the East Coast first, so it takes 10 years.
That's right. Yeah.
Oklahoma was doing it before. Oklahoma was doing it before I came here. And right. Now that I'm in Mountain Sky, we're 20 years behind right. now because right. the East Coast was doing it 10 years, like 20 years ago. So like, that's right. how it works. But I think, you know, I think of innovation and it's hard to think about innovation in the church because it moves at a snail's pace. And a lot of it has to do, I really believe a lot of it has to do with emotion, that we don't want to let go of something or we're held together by the pews or, mm-hmm. you know, Aunt Susie's stained glass window. Dear Lord, if we change that, you know, the pastor has to be in the office because in the 50s, that's what the pastor did, you know, like, there's a lot of emotion that is tied to the church that makes innovation almost difficult because in innovation, you've got to strip some things away. You've got to let go of some things and really look towards, you know, what's out there. And I think that's the biggest hindrance in the church in regards to being innovative. I mean, that's at least from what I've seen.
And Michael, maybe that's the conversation, right? Like what's hindering us from innovating, right? Like what's slowing us down outside of just the conversation shift, right? Like we've shifted into kind of crisis mode. We've shifted into, man, this job is really hard. And, you know, outside of those couple of things, what is slowing innovation down?
I think what's slowing innovation down is the speed of ministry or the speed of what we think is creativity. And we run towards the new and we get so tired of running from one thing to the next that we aren't actually able to do the work of creating something that is going to last and be sustainable or be beautiful, because we're bouncing all over the place. You know, certainly by being in ministry, you know, not a long time, but I think 15, 16 years has got enough time around the block to be able to see, okay, here comes another book, here comes another thing, here comes another resource. And it's like, we got to run to this and then we got to run to that. And, oh, we're going to do it this way now. And then we're running over here to do it this way. And I mean, that's what I really liked with Rick Rubin's comment of being going from producers to reducers. And because how many articles did you read a couple of years ago about from pastor to producer? right? Where now we're all getting online and we're getting cameras, and pastors within a period of a week or two had to figure out how to put their whole church in a video form, COVID, all that stuff, right? And but that's why I like the, we are get so busy producing things that we don't ever take the time to reduce it to what we actually need to do. I mean, I think it feels so counter to talking about, if we're going to talk about innovation, we have to talk about, you know, there's four basic fundamental things of innovation. I read about it in a, you know, some Harvard Business Review article. Matthew, Harvard is a school that would never let you in. Just
yes, I would, because being Native American, I have a better chance of getting in than most do.
I'm not going. I'm not. Yeah. All right. They talked about product innovation, market innovation, process innovation, and organization innovation. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to leverage a multi-series with you all. It's like when I was in college, one of the great places to take a date was to the pottery shop. Because what you would do is you would paint pottery on the first date, and you'd get to know the person, and you're painting the pottery. And then at the end of the night, the person says, okay, we're going to fire this, and you need to come back in a week to pick it up. And that guarantees a second date. So that's move. That's
or an awkward like, hey, here's your pottery.
Right. And, you know, I was such a smooth character in college, too, that I didn't even have a car. So not only would the person have to drive me, they did have to drive me a second time. How many pieces of pottery do you think are left in that shop in Lexington, Kentucky, because they didn't want to go on a second date with me?
I was really hoping you were going to say that your mom had to drive you and your date. Like, that's what I was hoping the story would go towards.
Right. Well, we all can't have the face of a Greek god, Matthew. Sorry. So a lot of what we talk about innovation is the new product or the new market. Like, then who are the people we're going to reach? And, you know, we've been around enough to talk about millennials. Then we've talked about Generation Z or whatever else. And like, okay, about 5 or 10 years, right, we're going to be talking about the unnamed generation of people that we have to figure out how to reach. And, you know, and millennials stink, by the way, you know, that's just sort of a standard as a Gen X person. I just have to say that, right? Isn't that contractually obligated to bash the generation behind you?
Behind you, yeah.
Good way to reach them. Yeah. process innovation, organizational innovation. So the product innovation is going to be a new thing or a new item. The market innovation is going to be new or reallocated resources. So we're not going to focus here. We're going to focus there in a new market or new people. Process is the application or a method that's going to yield new solutions. So we've seen a little bit of this with something like the one board model, and, you know, how do we make decisions as a church and things like, you know, things like that. And then, of course, organizational innovation, which, you know, in our denomination, we are fantastic at it. We're leading the way. Changes with internal processes, structures, or mindsets.
Right.
Just give us about another 4 years and we'll have another meeting to talk about this. And nothing will happen.
And nothing will change. And then
we'll have another 4 years. So I love our church.
But yeah. Same. And
if you want to tackle one of those, you want to tackle all four, or you're like, nobody cares about this, let's talk about how I'm having a great hair day today.
It's pretty good.
I can
day.
Spend some time about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good hair day. We're both wearing hats, so clearly you know where we're at. I do. I like the from producer to reducer, because when you look at our structure and our understanding of church, and the way we do things, right? I don't know that out of COVID we came out of production mode, a lot of us. I would be willing to bet many, many, many of our Methodist colleagues are still producing worship in a way that feels produced for people in person and online and are wondering why it feels off. I know there are Sundays I'm like, it wasn't there, right? There was something off about that. And when I think back, I go, oh, right. Like I missed the boat on this piece. Cause I'm still thinking about all the ways that people view and experience worship and still felt very produced. Right. And so, yeah, stripping it down into what it is and making it meaningful, not always something we're good at, because we try to take the whole package of United Methodism and what we've done forever and try to cram it into these little boxes, never letting go of anything, but just trying to, man, we're gonna go from producer to reducer, but we're not gonna let anything go and just try to cram it into this little box. And if that screams innovation, I don't know what does, right? And I think you're right. It's the willingness to let some things go, to hold on to the things that are working and are meaningful and vital. But you know, grieving and saying goodbye to the things that don't always have to happen. And that's okay, but it's really, really hard work. Like I said, we meet every 4 years to have that conversation, and here we are.
So you're saying you want to grieve the loss of charge conference reports?
I would love to start a fire in my office and keep myself warm with said documents.
I mean, you know, and I think that one of the bigger struggles that the church has in a sense of trying to be innovative is that, and I was talking about this last week with some colleagues, that the struggle is that our reporting narrative doesn't allow us to be innovative, that we have to produce according to the report. We have to, like, that's just because, dear Lord, if you were being innovative and you were doing all these great things and people were coming to Jesus and what you were doing, and if none of it falls on your TPS reports, like, you're going to be, you know, the DS is going to come at you because, well, you're not producing, even though, like, all the narrative is actually not what is on the report. I mean, I think in order for us to really be innovative as a church is that those TPS reports have to go. And we've got to go back to the narrative, the biblical, because we were a biblical narrative people. Dear Lord, if the canon now was Excel spreadsheets of worship and salaries and like, how does that tell people how God worked in the world? Like, I mean, I'm just, I think that in order for us to make those changes, like to do those things, like that has to change more than anything, because when we're being held accountable, we use that word accountability. But like the accountability really isn't what we should be doing. That's where I think a lot of our struggle is. That's where I think a lot of our rub is, in a sense of not letting us be innovative, because we have pastors that want to do new things, but they know that they can't because it doesn't go on the TPS report.
Yeah, I think in fairness to the, you know, middle to upper management of the organization, you know, like, I think they're just trying to do what they're trying to do. I don't think they're trying to come after anybody and make anybody else's life hard, but it's also, there's just this tension point of how do we bend it without breaking it? Mm-hmm. And so some of it is, I'm sure most people who get into an administrative type role in the church either see themselves as gifted in that way, or they see the possibility of making an impact on a larger level, or in, you know, being not a pastor to a church, but a pastor to pastors. And then what's thrown in their lap is going to be the TPS reports that they have to provide. And so, I mean, I think part of it is having compassion for every part of it, but also saying, what are the things that, as much as we can reduce it down to, what are the core elements of who we are? What our local church's mission, or, you know, the identity of it, letting it be contextual, because look, innovation isn't just about risk taking. It's about leveraging the resources that are already there for the purpose of something new. And so, have you ever had or felt like you got this great idea and you're going to bring it to your people, or how much of it is very like, it's vision centric. Like the pastor has to have a vision, and they're not, without vision, the people will perish. And so that means, pastor, you have to be the visionary, right? And what pastors do is they will think of something that will be a new idea, or something that will lead them into the future, which is, frankly, if they don't do the work, it's just going to be something from a book that they read years ago, or a podcast that they just listened to, that's going to be like, what about this idea? And they don't do the necessary and the hard work of actually realizing that the people in front of them, they don't necessarily care about this new idea, because at the end of the day, the audience doesn't know what it wants. It only knows what's come before. And so why don't we meet people where they are, and help to move or to leverage towards a new identity? I think a lot of pastors are going to be like, I need to go vision for this church. And they don't spend any time with the people in the church to see what resources are actually there, or to invite them and their resources for something that is bigger than what they're currently doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it goes back to the core of who we are, right? I didn't understand who I was as a pastor until you gave me the language for it while you were here, doing some of the work that you did with us out here, and being able to own and to understand and own that I'm a rural church pastor, right? Like that's who I am. That's who I want to be. Those are the people I want to be with. But yet we work in a system that says, well, you're going to start out in the rural edges of our conference, and then you'll work your way in, and you'll work up the ladder, and you'll do the things. And then one day you'll be a big church pastor. And you truly gave me the language to say, no, that's not who I am. And I'm okay with that. Right. And I don't know that we're given that permission very often. Because of the systems that we work in and the nature of just jobs and calls and careers, it seems like we pastor in a place where we want to be, where we want to get to, rather than the place that we are in. And you're right, we don't get to know the people. We don't walk down Main Street. We don't stop and have an hour-long conversation in the grocery store while we're getting milk, right? And those, in a lot of communities, those things are important. And because I think because we don't want to be that pastor in the future, we're not that pastor now, and therefore don't see the needs and meet people where they are in our community. We don't see the places we can innovate and grow into. We just see what we have or what we don't have.
Well, thank you.
No, thank you.
Well said. Well, you know what I got for you, Matthew?
What?
Knuckle sandwich, right? Your noggin. That's what I'm gonna give you, buddy.
You know, my wife said the same thing before I left today too. So I must be in the water today.
So I think here's the good news about the future of the church. We're already doing it. The problem is, you know, I think you talked about how I love the idea of the timeline, right? Of, you know, the Eastern churches are doing it 10 years. And Matthew, you said you started doing it in Oklahoma, and then now give it a couple of years and you're in more out West, and hey, we've got this new thing that we're doing. And you're like, I did that 3 years ago in Oklahoma. Right. Mm-hmm. I think there's this, you know, mainline churches are generally like a decade behind the more probably innovative or mega church movement. And so, because they start doing it, we start to see the effectiveness of it. We're like, why don't we do that too? But I think if we can understand that we are probably situated best where we are now, I'm not saying organizationally or even process for innovation. You know, I think organizationally and process innovation, we have a lot to still learn. The key for us is the product and the market, because 10 years from now, it's going to be reversed. So the conversations that we're having at our local church, district, region, annual conference, denominational, jurisdictional level, whatever, The mega church down the street from us will be having those same conversations 10 years from now. And they're saying, how did you navigate that? Mm. Because right now they're like, no, we don't want to deal with this topic. We're fine. We, and you're like, okay, okay. You come talk to us in 10 years.
Right.
When everyone in your church is like, I just had another decade of this crap and this isn't making any difference. You know what, we're here and you know what our message has been the whole time? It's been this thing called grace. You want to keep talking about, let's talk about grace. That's the thing that we're going to talk about. And we've been talking about it ever since the beginning. We're going to keep talking about it, grace and community. Because I think people are going to get tired of, you know, I heard of one podcast, I can't remember who said it, but they called it Coldplay and TED Talks.
Yeah.
And I love both of those things. Right. I got Coldplay on my wall. They're one of my favorite bands. But people, you know, these black box theater, you know, performances, gosh, I kind of like it too sometimes where I go to these conferences or what, I'm like, ooh, good music. I like this. But I'm also like, that ain't going to last, man.
Right.
So we can either try and say, how do I turn my sanctuary into a black box theater and get a band like Coldplay and change my sermon into being a TED Talk? Which I think there's still some benefit to that too, to some degree. But I think it's the reducing down to who we are, what we do well, because we've got a great message, I think. And I think we've got a hope for people, and to not let some of the bigger parts of it get in the way. So I think maybe some of the greatest work of innovation isn't going to be coming up with a new idea. It just might be, you know, slowing down, leaning into who we are, and then who's there, and then starting to see where a new path might be. I know that's not as fun, you know, rather than a here's a new program or here's a new idea or here's a new book. But I think if you want something to last, truly last, because innovations don't always last, right? It's boiling it down. What do you think, Matthew?
Let's give Matthew a nemesis response here.
Agreed. You know, I think that that's the truth, leaning into who we are and what we have available. I think far too often churches look at what they don't have, and that's all they focus on, when the authenticity that they can offer their community is what they have, the resources that they have available. And, you know, you brought up the idea of the record producer. One of the things I was thinking about is someone who loves to do editing and that kind of stuff, like the work that goes into making sure that something sounds good also means a lot of trial and error and a lot of willingness to maybe put something out there that, you know, could be better. I mean, you know, Taylor Swift has definitely learned that with the re-release of all of her albums now, getting to put her mark on it. And I think that the church can learn from that too. And that, like, we don't have to be like I call them the production churches because they have high production value. That we have some richness in our tradition that allows us to do some really great, meaningful things that are really what's important, with the lights on. I was listening to a podcast a while back, and they were talking about one of the downfalls of that church, of that kind of style of worship, is that everything's done in darkness and you can't see who's with you in the community. So if you're going through something, you don't know who's going to be next to you. While as in most of our, you know, older sanctuaries, like, you can't dim the lights in those things because it's too bright. Like, there's just no way of doing it. Like, right. You know? And so I think there's some value to that. And I think lifting up that tradition and saying, hey, this is what was good. Like, this is stuff that can stick, leaning into it a little more. I think in a lot of ways we've thrown it out. Whereas if we leaned into it a little bit more, there's some creativity, there's some flexibility, there's some things that we can do that we don't have to work a whole lot at. And it's really cool because we can invite people to be with us. You know, our All Saints service this Sunday, I'm having more people be involved with worship than have been involved with worship in a long time, because we're creating those spaces to do that. And I think sometimes innovative is being simple, and going back to the drawing board and saying, you know, hey, this is what got us here. Let's do what got us here. You know, and I hate to use a sports metaphor, but, you know, sometimes you got to do what gets you there to win. And so I think we've forgotten that in a lot of ways because we've just been, we're trying to do the new thing when we forget that we have so many good things at our hands. Zach?
Well, maybe that's the thing to remember about innovation is that we're not throwing out the old, right? We're building upon the foundations of those who have gone before us and those who are still there. When I did campus ministry, my plea to the conference and to churches were, you've been there, right? You've gone through this hell. You've experienced these things. And these students, these young people are some quite literally dying to hear your story, to know that they're not alone. And that's something that's so beautiful about mainline denominations and especially the Methodist Church is we have a long history of saints and people who are there, who have been there. And, you know, you can look across most of our congregations and, you know, they're aging congregations, but gosh, the wisdom that they hold and that we can provide that sacred space for people just to be present and to show up and be authentically themselves. And like Matt said, with the lights on, knowing who's sitting beside you that can lean over and go, yeah, I've been there. If you ever want to chat, let's go. I'd love to buy you coffee, right? And especially in the transient world in which we're more and more living into, my kids don't have grandparents within the same town or within a couple hours or the same state, right? Like the people that are in our congregations become grandparents and parents and people that we look up to that are so valuable and vital to our lives just as people, much less clergy. And when I think of innovation, I think that sometimes we forget that innovation is just throw out all the old and let's start something new. And now we have the shoulders of our saints that we're standing on. Let's not forget that. We're here now because of them. How do we build upon that so that when we go, that foundation's even greater?
And I think the, you know, I talked about running from thing to thing, you know, and I think the reason we do that, or the biggest obstacle to innovation, of doing the hard work of innovation, I think is fear. Mm. I think it's the fear of when we take the time to do the self-reflection, to do the hard work, we're not going to discover. We're afraid of what we'll discover. So I'll close with another Ruben quote from this great book that he just published about. I think it's called The Creative Act or The Art of Creativity or something like that. I probably should know what the title of the book is if I'm going to talk about it so much.
We'll put links in the show notes. It's fine.
So he says, you need to be free to express what you fear to express. Be free to express what you fear to express. That's hard work. Mm-hmm. I think it's easier to say, I'm going to try something new in the name of innovation than to get to my fears and to lead from a place of self-reflection, self-identity and calling and honesty and authenticity, and say, this is who I am, this is who I am not. And that's how we know how to innovate, because we may not be the type of person that knows how to do organizational innovation, but we might be good at market innovation. Like, you know, we might be a better product innovator than we are with process. That I, you know, some people are idea people and they like to come up with new ideas, but they have no idea how to work it within the system of getting it actually passed. So part of that is, I think, you know, knowing yourself. But that's the hard work, and I'm going to invite people to do it.
Yeah, I like it. I think knowing yourself and then surrounding yourself with people who have the other skills, right? That's what That's what we should be doing as people, especially in a connectional system like we are in the Methodist Church. We should be able to reach out to Michael Smith and go, man, I am good at the market part of this. Can you help me with the other? Right. Or do you know people, you know, and even in our churches, surrounding ourselves with leadership and people who can fill in the gaps, who can use their gifts and graces. And remember, no matter what size of church we're in or community we're in, it's not about us, right? Like, sure, we lead the charge in some ways, but we all gotta have help. The idea of the Lone Ranger pastors just gotta go. And being able to lean into all of that and surround ourselves with people who we can lean on and who will lean on us, huge.
I love the reference of the Lone Ranger pastor, of which it is, have you ever seen that show?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's because you guys are out west and you're 50 years.
Yeah, I'm living it.
No, you're living Yellowstone.
I am living Yellowstone right now.
That's a great. Yeah. Sounds like the Lone Ranger pastor. I'm talking to my grandfather over here.
Right.
Well, he saw it in a book, and so he just has always held on to it. And so, like, he uses it.
It is a picture book. Didn't have words.
That's true, too. Yeah, I think that's the fun thing is recognizing, like, who do we have? Like, what are our assets that we have available to us? You know, there are some things we can do however we're in the church that can... and we don't have to have a whole lot. I think our biggest win this year is bringing back dinner groups. It's been a while since I've seen this much excitement in something that really is just getting together and having a meal. There's nothing other than that. We had 62 people sign up, which is way more. Like, I was hoping, I was like, I'm not gonna lie, and I've been honest with the churches, I was hoping for 25 and maybe three or four groups to literally have to beg to have more group leaders because we had more groups than we had, you know, space was a great thing. And a lot of it was just because we were willing to try something different. And we learned from our past of these were things that caused this to fall apart. And so we tried to remove those to say, hey, you know, you don't, we can offer lunch groups. And so we're going to have lunch groups and we're going to have dinner groups and we're going to allow groups to be, you know, the only real requirement for groups is they meet at least three times between October and May. I mean, talk about a freeing experience for people that are so used to having a regimen or working towards having, you know, working into something that they don't have versus taking everything that they have available to them and utilizing that. And I think that's how you kind of start innovation in my period is just really understanding what assets you have available to do something different and new, or even just revitalizing something.
Well,
I think, okay. Yeah. I think the, a indication of a quality podcast or conversation is asking and conjuring up more questions than answers. And that's something this podcast prides itself on. We're not going to give you any answers. We don't have them. And that's what I appreciate about this conversation. It's not the magic bullet, right? It's not, if you'll do step 1 through 5, you got this and your church is just going to explode. No, what are the pieces that you can take and go, oh, it's me. I can do that, or crap. I can't do that, or I have failed in those ways and that's okay. You talk about grace, man. Clergy and leaders are some of the least graceful people to themselves than anybody I've ever met. And I think if we can start there and offer a little grace to ourselves as we innovate, innovation will come. These things will come in our leadership. They'll come in our personal lives, and it's there. And so I appreciate you, Michael, coming on and not giving us the answer.
Well, I'm happy to do that. Thank you.
I mean, I know part of it, you didn't want Matt to succeed in life. So, you know, you and I will talk later and you can give me the answer.
Well,
I assume that anything of substance that he said in the last hour together has been from a teleprompter that Zach has typed out for him to say. I see it in the background there. So he actually, can't hide it.
Actually, as loyal as I am to things, it's from Bishop. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
She wrote it all down for me. I actually drew pictures for me so that way because she knows that I struggle reading. I definitely value those things. And I do value, like, I'm not gonna lie, I was really hoping for answers, but not having answers is actually a better place to be.
Yeah.
So, you know, we thank you, the Right Reverend Michael Smith, for being on today.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate you. And when I say you, I mean Zach, and definitely not Matthew.
I mean,
so much fun, man. Thanks for being on.
Yeah.
Are we ready to start recording this now?
Yeah. So that was the dry run.
yes. I'll edit you out and it will just be Zach and I talking without
with zero content.
So
well, this like is a normal week. this is the Eastern correspondent for the Bearded Theologian signing off.
yet again, we've, like always, we always tend to have fun more than we do anything else. We want to thank our listeners for listening today, encourage them to go to our website at beardedtheologians.com, and you can go back to the last time that Reverend Smith was on the show and see if he's gotten better or worse, and then you feel free to comment that in the comment section. Thumbs up or thumbs down on YouTube for those that are watching on YouTube. And then whatever else you're listening on, just, you know, 2 stars and just feel free to trash Reverend Smith and Reverend Bechtold's thrashing of poor Reverend Franks. But, you know, we thank you for our listeners and for the Bearded Theologians. I'm Matt Franks.
I'm Zach Bechtold. And you can find Michael Smith on all social media platforms at Michael W. Smith. Thanks for checking us out.
I want you to subscribe and like this video and put that push that thumbs up.
Thank you for listening to the Bearded Theologians podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share on all social media outlets. You can check out old episodes and more information at beardedtheologians.com. Thanks for checking us out.